All right, welcome, folks. Mike Adams here, the founder of Brighteon.com, and we are joined once again today by Mr. Ed Dowd, who has done, I think, the very best research, well, he and his team, into excess mortality and the disabilities that are happening among people following the vaccine mandates that were, you know, kind of worldwide almost. And he's got new information. He's got a great book that is relatively new called Cause Unknown. We'll tell you how to get that book. But Ed Dowd joins us today to give us more details about his latest findings. Mr. Dowd, it's an honor to have you on. Thank you for joining me.
Thanks, Mike. Good to be here. And look, this is, we're in the middle of a fraud and a cover-up. So, you know, we continue to do the work as, you know, imagine this on Wall Street. Enron's a fraud. You know it, but it's still not really well known. That's where we are in the case of this fraud. It's the greatest asymmetric information gap of my lifetime. Yes. Meaning, you know, 10 to 15% of us know what exactly is going on, the damage that's been done, how deadly these vaccines are, and the rest of the population is oblivious. And you know, the good news is the booster uptake seems to have gone way down because enough people have enough discernment to know I'm not taking something that doesn't work. I can't be bothered. But there are still those who continue to get it at the recommendations of their willfully ignorant doctors and the health authorities around the globe. So the goal in writing this book was to make people aware of the fact that something very odd has happened in 21 and 22. And it's so odd that the numbers don't lie. And my theory of the case, it's the vaccines. I haven't heard anybody come up with anything remotely reasonable to explain what's going on with excess mortality and disabilities, especially amongst younger folks and working, and especially the employed folks. And the punchline is this, I say this in the book, it's been detrimental to your health to be employed in 2021 and 2022. And the new, you know, we went to Senator Johnson's roundtable a couple of weeks ago, and I talked about disability data. The U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics does a survey every month, just, and that's also the people who give you the employment numbers every month, the non-farm payroll number that CNBC and all these economic clowns talk about. And they also ask questions about disabilities. And, you know, they ask, are you disabled and not able to work? Or is anyone in your household disabled? And what we found starting around February of 2021, and really starting to accelerate in May of 21, there was a tremendous rate of change in disabilities across the board. So much so that the absolute numbers were this. It was 29 to 30 million for the prior 4 to 5 years prior to COVID. It would go up and down, up and down, up and down, kind of in a flat line. And then starting around February through May, it took off. And we noticed a rate of change, year-over-year rate of change, 3 standard deviation prior to history, which only happens 0.03% of the time. So mm-hmm. Something was going on in our country, and this can be, you know, extrapolated across the globe because we're using U.S. data, where disabilities took off. And as of the high was in September of 2022, a couple months ago, it was 33.2 million, so an additional 3.2 million people. If you're conservative, it could be 4.2 if you use 29 as the start. Became disabled in a very short period of time. And you know, a 3 sigma, that's a 3 standard deviation event. That's 3 sigma in my world. That only happens 0.03% of the time. Those of us on Wall Street, you know, when we see these events, something's changed. And usually it's a signal to investigate, especially if it's a stock, and do some work. And if it's a new trend, you buy the trend because something's changed. And usually when I was on Wall Street, you know, I would buy a little bit first just to get on board and then start doing the work. And knowing that something's changed. And well, this is not a stock. This is the health of our country. And when I went to see Senator Johnson, I basically told him that when we break down the disability data since February, May of 2021, the employed amongst us, which is about 100 million of the 340 we got in the country, experienced a rate of increase in their disability of about 26%. And the general overall population only experienced 11%. That's super curious and strange, seeing as how if you're employed, you tend to be healthier than the rest of the population because you can show up to work. So you know, sometimes in brief periods of time, the disability rate will rise for employed, especially, you know, if there's coming out of a recession because people are going back to work, but not like this. It's literally off the charts. The number represented at the time I presented to Senator Johnson, about 1.2 million. And we've done a little more work. We added in the months of October and November. And the number now for the employee ages 16 to 64 that got disabled since the vaccines were introduced is about 1.7 million. And, you know, that's a big, big number because we only have about 100 million people employed in this country that has serious economic impacts going forward, which you and I can talk about, Mike.
Okay. Can I jump in here with a couple of questions?
Sure.
It's great that you have the updated numbers, and this is what I really appreciate about you, is that you dig into the numbers. You have a team, as I understand it, some statisticians and some you look at U.S. Labor Department statistics and insurance industry statistics that are aggregated. And let me just also mention, the name of your book is Cause Unknown, and it's out now. I think it's selling very rapidly. You've hit number one in what, three categories on Amazon right now?
Yeah, immunology, virology, and vaccinations. It's currently 352 ranked out of all the millions of books on Amazon, which I'm told is very good because we're competing against Christmas runs of Dr. Seuss and other types of books. It would be higher if it wasn't Christmas.
Well, you know, if you can beat Green Eggs and Ham, you're doing great right now these days. But I also want to mention it's available at our site, brightionbooks.com. We have inventory ready to ship, or you can get it at Amazon or Barnes & Noble, you know, bn.com or other booksellers. And I think Skyhorse Publishing sells them directly as well. So you have a lot of choices.
Hey, Mike, I want to make a plug for you. It's currently not in stock on Amazon. So go to Brighteon before you even think about going to Amazon.
Oh, okay, great. Yeah, thank you. We do have inventory, brightionbooks.com. We carry your book. We carry Dr. Malone's book. We carry Robert F. Kennedy Jr.'s book and a lot of titles from Skyhorse. But yeah, thank you for that. So let me ask you then, in terms of, I want the numbers of excess mortality and then disability separately, but excess mortality, I believe the last time we spoke, you were talking about one group had something in the 30% range and another group was perhaps the low 40s percentile. Of excess mortality. What do those numbers look like right now, and what are those groups?
Well, last year in 2021, for the group life policyholders of this country, which are basically those who work for Fortune 500 or mid-sized companies, it's a freebie you get when you sign on with the company. You get, you know, you first day on the job, you go to HR and you sign your healthcare form, and you pick a plan. And then there's also another section, group life disability and death. And you sign that, and you then name a beneficiary should you die. And, you know, typically speaking, this group of people are the healthiest amongst us. And that was proven in a report by the Society of Actuaries in 2016, where they detailed that the group life folks die at about a third the rate of the general U.S. population in any given year. And that intuitively makes a whole lot of sense. Why would that be the case? Well, you have to get a death claim, you have to actually be employed at the firm at the time. So if you get fired or quit, you get nothing. So showing up to work is generally a sign of health, number one. Number two, you get access to some of the best healthcare with some of these plans, and then you tend to be better educated. So overall, the health profile of this group historically has always been better than the general population.
Makes sense.
And so in 2020, when COVID affected everybody, it didn't discriminate. It affected the general population more. The excess mortality was higher for the general population than the group life folks. Well, in 2021, that flipped. And the age is 25. These are not my numbers. This is a Society of Actuaries. Okay, this is just claims. These are excess claims or excess deaths, whatever you want to call it. They experienced 40% excess deaths / claims in 2021 from ages 25 through 64. The general U.S. population at the same time only experienced excess mortality of 32%, 8-point differential.
Okay.
And so if you're not brain dead and if you have the slightest bit of two cells working, critical thinking skills would suggest something changed in 2021. And you have to ask yourself, what really changed in 2021 to maybe cause that to happen? Well, we know it's a global mass vaccination program and forced mandates. And when you dig into the data just from the Society of Actuaries, there was an event that's plain as day. And if we had the chart and you could see it, you would see, you know, they had a heat map. And there's red all over the younger age cohort, 25 through 44, which are known as the millennials, experienced about 84% excess claims / mortality in the third quarter of 2021. What do we know happened there, Mike? In the summer, large corporations started to mandate vaccines, and then the executive order on September 9th from Joe Biden, any company over 100. And so we know what happened. It was an event. People that were hesitant were forced to basically at gunpoint to either keep your job or get vaccinated. And, you know, a lot of people obviously needed their jobs and went along with it if they were being hesitant or lazy or both. It didn't matter. But that's what happened. So that data is undeniable. Okay, now, so you have death data suggesting that the employed folks took a bigger hit. And then a separate database, which I was highlighting in the beginning of your show, the U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics shows exactly the same thing. More disabilities in younger folks and the employed rather than, you know, the general older retired population in terms of the rate of change in their disability rate. You got to understand the disability rate for younger folks tends to be a lot lower than older folks, which makes sense. But the rate of change in the disability rates is what we focused on. And we've now done an even deeper analysis where we've compared it to the what we call the not in labor force, those people who removed themselves because they didn't want to take the jab. So they were either fired or they voluntarily removed themselves from the labor force. That group had the lowest rate of new disabilities since our starting date of February of 21, about 0.21% rate of new disabilities. The employed 16 through 64, about 100 million experienced a 1.18 or 1.2% increase in their disability rate. So it went from like 3.1 to 4.2, which is just insane. And that translates into about 1.7 million people. And when you compare it relative to not in the labor force, so it's a relative comparison to those who didn't, who walked away from the jab, that's a 553% difference between the employed and the not in labor force. Okay, and it's devastating.
Yeah, that is devastating. What I want to do for our listeners, I want to translate these numbers as closely as possible into daily numbers because it's easier for people to grasp. And if we start with excess mortality, you're talking about the general population had excess mortality of 32%. So if we take the typical number of normal daily deaths in the United States pre-COVID, that would be about 7,700 per day. And if we add 32% to that, that's about 2,460 people per day dying who would otherwise not have died is what that looks like. Does it sound like I'm doing the math correctly on that?
Yeah, the math's correct. And then within that group, the rate is higher for the subset of those who are working at these Fortune 500 companies. So
exactly,
the numbers are smaller, but you know, you look at the they're not supposed to die. That's the point, right?
Right. Well, so, but what I want to get from you here, if I may ask, is what's the closest way we can translate the daily number of newly disabled, or let's say excess disability conditions? How many people per day roughly are being affected?
So if it was 3.2 million, and so we started in February to February is 12 months, and then March, April, May, June, July, August, September, October, November, December, 9. So let's call that 21 months.
Okay.
21 months, and you take 1.7 million, and you could calculate month and then days if you use 30, and that's about the newly disabled every day.
Okay, great. So that's 630 days, and we're going to say 170 million people into what I want to say 630 days.
That's 1.7 million people.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah. Sorry, I was doing the math differently.
And that's just the employed. That's just the employed. If you want to do the whole population, use 3.2.
Okay. Oh, yeah. So 3.2 million people into 630 days is 5,000 people a day.
Yeah. There you go.
Wow. All right. Yeah. So if you add that to the number who have died, excess mortalities of almost 2,500, then we're talking about almost 7,500 people per day taken out of the potential workforce.
Correct.
Okay.
Correct. And let's also think, let's think about this too. So about 3.2 million conservatively, because if you use the 29, it's four. Let's give the benefit of the doubt. 3.2 million, 1.7 million of those are employed people. So you can see that is, you know, basically half. It's insanity.
So then we have to look forward and ask, because you know the very basis of a civilization is the productive individuals contributing in some way, services or labor or ideas. You know how it works. And if we are removing 7,500 people per day from that equation, how, you know, that is not an insignificant number.
No, that's
huge.
And it's huge. And, you know, Mike, when you read the headlines, you see, you know, they talk about the great resignation. That's why we can't get into millennials are lazy and all this nonsense. I think the predominant reason for the help wanted signs we are seeing is this. And then secondly, you know, supply chains didn't break in 2020. They started breaking in 21 and 22. There was disruptions. But why do we have supply chain breakages? Well, yes, we have some global issues, but we have less people to move things around and to show up to work. And not only is it the disabled person, you know, if you're taking care of a disabled person, you miss work and you have hours that you miss because you're taking care of that person. You have to go home early for an appointment. I mean, this has knock-on effects that are just, you know, and it's also probably is leading to somewhat. I mean, obviously, money supply increase led to inflation with some stupid energy policies on purpose. But inflation is also wages, and when you have less people to do jobs, those left get higher wages, generally speaking.
Well, that's interesting because there's also demand destruction being caused by how many people are disappearing from the consumer side of this. But I want to compare this with you here with previous wars. So the Vietnam War, I know it killed roughly 60,000 Americans. Do you recall, I mean, do you know what was the duration of that war? Was it?
That was 12 years.
12 years.
And when my partner, Josh Sterling, the former sell-side analyst on Wall Street, at working at Sanford Bernstein, we through March of 2021 and February of 22, just that little slice, there were 61,000 excess millennials, according to the CDC data, the way we calculated the baseline. 61,000 millennials just kind of went poof between March of 21 and February of 22. It's probably higher now, but that's a Vietnam War in 11 months.
That is extraordinary. And even based on the numbers that you and I were just talking about here, if you're, you know, in Vietnam, if 60,000 Americans were killed in 12 years, 5,000 a year, but you and I are just talking about 7,500 people killed or disabled per day.
Right.
In other words, in one day, more people removed than an entire year in Vietnam, or at least Americans in Vietnam. That is extraordinary.
Yes. Yes. And, you know, anecdotally, we're seeing it. I mean, I'm sure you're seeing it too. Things are just not getting it done as quickly. God forbid your car gets dented, good luck getting parts and labor to fix it. The new trick is to if your car's anywhere close to book value, the insurance company will trash it, take your car and sell the parts.
Right.
You know, they're not saints at insurance companies. I mean, this happened to my Audi. I got a little fender bender in July, and it was close. You know, it's an old one. It's a 2011 Audi A6, and I loved that car. But I couldn't get it. I couldn't get it into a body shop because they didn't have enough people working. And then there was a parts issue. And then there were so many cars backed up. I couldn't even get it towed for an estimate. So I had to take photos of it. And then they got back to me 2 months later. Finally, my insurance company gave me $10,000 for something that was worth $6,000. they're not saints. And I you know, being a curious person that I am, I asked around and I found out that's what they're doing.
Yeah. Okay. Well, but there's a bigger question on all of this. And I ask you this now as you're with your investor brain fully engaged, because you are a hedge fund manager, I believe, and you know this realm. What does this mean in your brain for what's going to happen to corporations and debt and loans? I mean, there are big macroeconomic implications from what we're talking about here.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. So there's going to be labor shortages for sure. So corporations are going to struggle to hire help. They're going to steal from each other. Their margins are going to get squeezed. Their stock prices will go lower over time. This also has longer-term deflationary effects. It's inflationary initially, but you know, as you have demand destruction and people start to make do without normal goods and services, they get used to it. I mean, we're going into, you know, we had an epic growth phase globally the last 30 years with globalization and pumping money overseas to China and all this nonsense. What we did in the U.S. is basically financialized our country, took all our plants and equipment and put it overseas. So our economy for the last 15 years has been a zombie economy catering to the wealthy. So, you know, the wealthy would kind of keep people employed, you know, building new homes, services, restaurants. That's going to go the other way. And I'm looking, number one, we've already projected at our firm Finance Technology, the deep, deep recession coming this way in Q1 and Q2. That's in the bag. That's baked into the cake. And then we have to see how the Fed and the powers to be respond. But I'm thinking we're going to see bouts of inflation and deflation, much like the 70s, and lower asset values over time, and just general chaos. I mean, I've been saying to people, this is a glacial Mad Max. It's not going to happen overnight. You're not going to wake up one day and it's going to be in the Wall Street Journal, but you're going to notice it over time.
That's an interesting phrase, glacial Mad Max. I like that. Now, and you've seen in the last quarter, demand for, especially for consumer products and automobiles and so on, has really plummeted. And
yeah.
I believe you've spoken about the anticipated layoffs and increased joblessness in the first quarter and second quarter of next year. Now, what happens when, in response to that, the government decides to keep upping the stimulus to individuals? You know, here's free money to go out and cover costs since you're jobless now. I mean, it's beyond a welfare state. It becomes a zombie stimulus addict state almost. What happens from that point in your view?
Well, so if demand falls off, people get fired and they decide to do the UBI and just give money to people, which we didn't used to do in the past. We had unemployment insurance. And then obviously the gig was you took an unemployment insurance that only lasted a certain amount of time, and then you were expected to go find a job. What we're going to do is permanently remove people from the labor force because some people will like the UBI, unfortunately, because that's the way some people are wired. They don't have any purpose in life other than sit on their butt, smoke weed, play video games, what have you. Demand destruction, but inflation as well. Because when you give free money without any productive output, it's just going to be super inflationary. So we're going to see a decrease in goods and services. And if they do that, if they do the UBI, it'll be dollars basically printed and given to people. There'll be too many dollars chasing too few goods, especially with people not producing goods or services. So it's going to become again, bouts of deflation with hyperinflation. It's going to be chaos.
Now there's a critical point or a tipping point that can be reached, and we've seen it throughout history in societies where if a certain percentage of the population is no longer productive, then the complex interdependencies of, especially complex societies, just-in-time delivery, long supply chains, and so on, begins to catastrophically fail. Are we at risk of something like that, or is this just going to hurt bad for a while, but then we'll recover?
You know, I don't know. I have to see what it looks like at the bottom and what the global response is to the economic downturn, how it unfolds, what policy measures they take. But, again, it's going to be glacial. You know, right now, I just give you an anecdote. Let's use healthcare as an example. We, you know, most of the healthcare workers had to take the jab, and those that didn't left. And there's already, you know, the disability numbers and the deaths you and I talked about, the shortages in staff right now. Let's use radiology as a anecdote. I've gotten a number of radiologists coming into my social media telling me they're seeing labor shortages there. You can guess why. Yeah. And so that's backing up the ability to get diagnostic evaluations to doctors. So if you go in for your MRI and CAT scan, you know, the doctor would, you know, tell you your results within a day or two. Now that's taken weeks. So this kind of thing is just going to proliferate, where it's going to get harder and harder to do things we used to just take for granted. And to your point, complex systems break down. Again, it's hard to project, but it smacks to me of chaos and going back to local. And globalization's done. That peaked. It's over. I think we're at peak wokeism. Wokeism won't work when you can't feed your family or feed yourself. And you're arguing with people on Twitter kind of goes away with the dodo bird, and it gets interesting very quickly.
But I think you just said something really critical, that globalization is done. I completely agree with you. And I think the whole COVID supply chain catastrophe and the forced lockdowns has really exacerbated the collapse of globalization. But globalization, as you know, has few redundancies, right? It's centralized, it's long supply chains, it depends on abundance of energy for shipping. It depends on foreign nations like China to not be locked down, but then they have been locked down. And by the way, they're experiencing a population collapse, you know, a replacement collapse in their own population as well. You know, 1 to 2 generations down the road, China is going to be like modern day Japan, and there's no children around, you know, there's no young people around.
So interestingly enough, one of my partners, Carlos Alegria, wrote a book, Economic Cycles, Debt and Demographics. And in his book, second edition came out in 2021, he said that China, it coincidentally hit what we call a demographic wall in 2020. So they're already in population decline. And I just find it interesting that COVID and the release from the Wuhan lab coincided with that date. And
yes.
You got to understand, demographics are destiny. When you go into a population decline, like what happened with Japan had a blow off economic boom. But as soon as their demographic wall was hit in the early 90s, Japan never came back. And it's just fewer people to buy real estate from those wanting to sell it, especially the old people. And so you have the exact opposite of steady inflation. You have deflationary pressures, and Japan had a lost two decades. And in Japan, you know, the Japanese don't like to talk about this, but if you weren't already wealthy, it was really hard to get ahead anywhere in Japan. I mean, you kind of, and their birth rate's lower. Young men can't get married. The women don't like them. I mean, the young men don't seem interested in sex. It's a bizarre, strange utopian look into what might be coming our way, and it's already going to start happening in China.
Well, that, you know, we covered the mouse utopia experiments from the 1960s. That's exactly what happened. The mice became completely uninterested in sexual reproduction, and they began to show a lot of wokeism types of traits, like women taking on men's roles and men becoming pedophiles, or the male mice becoming pedophiles. Even in the mouse utopia, that was the Calhoun experiment. But I mean, It's bizarre how similar it is to what's happening today. But what I want to ask you next, if you don't mind, is that you know how the military might, or the ability of the United States to project power globally with the largest, most effective deep water navy and industrialization and so on, is a projection of the ability of the domestic population to engage in productive inventions and labor, and, you know, to maintain machinery and so on. And yet, if we can't reproduce, and you know, infertility is getting far worse following these vaccines, a lot of stillbirths, a lot of spontaneous abortions and so on, and inability to conceive. If you don't have a population that can replenish itself, you lose eventually, within a generation or so, the ability to manufacture the munitions, even the weapons of war, to project power. It, you know, the industrial military might goes away, does it not?
Yes. And, you know, look, is it no coincidence that we have basically, let's call it what it is, replacement immigration going on right now in the southern border, where Biden and crew are letting people in? That's to position the U.S. to at least be better off than China, Japan, South Korea has the same issue. All of Southern Europe does as well.
Yes.
So it's interesting that there is a replacement migration going on to get rid of the overpriced educated amongst us to bring in this cheap labor to pay. And so their hope is that our birth rates are, I mean, if I'm an evil, diabolical global chess player running the Federal Reserve, that would be part of my plan, I think. But again, that's pure speculation on my part.
Well, no, but I think that's accurate speculation. And I think that the powers that be running the United States think in their own minds that they are demographically kind of salvaging the U.S. situation as much as they can. I think that's part of their justification.
That's their justification, and of course, they don't care about the social consequences,
right?
On the road there, the road, you know, the social consequences you're bringing in an alien culture, less educated, that hasn't been vetted like we used to do with proper immigration, and they're going to move into cities and neighborhoods, and it's going to be like the gangs in New York, you know, that movie. I mean, this has happened before in history, with the Irish and the Italians coming and. You know, I think that's what the elite think they're going to do. They've done this before. They're trying it again.
Yeah, absolutely. They are. And I want to run something else past you here. Think about the fact that, you know, the demographics. Remember the book, I think it was in the 1990s, Ken Dykewald wrote a book called Age Wave. You recall that book?
I don't remember that, but I'm sure you could briefly describe it to me.
It talked about the demographic, the economic changes based on simple demographics and the baby boomers moving through their ages and what that means for the U.S. economy and housing and investments and corporations and Wall Street and so on. So we are at the waning side of a population, you know, a much earlier population boom in America. But the fact that our own fertility has fallen off a cliff at the same time now that these vaccines were introduced, causing infertility, excess mortality, and excess disability. It's like two volcanoes going off, dimming the sun.
Right, right. And you know, Carlos, my partner, in his book, he talked about the real estate crisis happened right when we hit the demographic peak of the baby boomers in their most productive earning years. And we literally, as we rolled from 07 to 08 and that started to see the decline of that, that's when real estate peaked and crashed.
Uh-huh.
And I think a lot of what we've seen in the last 12, 14 years with the, you know, the monetary supply and solving debt with more debt and the spending by the politicians has been nothing more than kicking the can down the road. Nothing changed. You know, the great financial crisis never got resolved.
Right.
It got, you know, the fraud and the debt just went on the banks, central banks' balance sheets. And we basically, I guess, you know, look, I don't know what the powers of people have been up to, but they've been preparing for a global economic collapse. And this last 12 years has been them setting the stage to introduce a control system, in my humble opinion.
Yeah. And now they've pushed it into warp speed.
Yeah.
Let me shift gears and ask you a completely different question. Well, it's a segue, but how is it that people like you and I and our listeners and your readers and fans and so on, we can be so, dare I say, I think we are well-informed. I think we're inquisitive. I think we're rational. I think we're projecting based on data. How is it that people like us can be so deeply informed on these issues, and yet we live in a society where governors, lawmakers, presidents, policymakers, regulators are oblivious. I mean, just purely oblivious to what's going on. Even intelligent people, successful people are oblivious. How does that coexistence happen with such a chasm?
You know, again, this is my third time seeing this. I saw it in the dot-com boom, and it's people. Unfortunately, a lot of people don't like to move away from the herd or the pack. And so if the herd or the pack is living in a different reality, than you and I, and our reality is the correct one. It's a perception deception. So they're perceiving that the rules of the game that they grew up with are the same. They haven't figured out yet that things are so different that they couldn't even imagine what we see. And, you know, when I saw Senator Johnson is on this, but, you know, I told him, I go, this is a national security crisis. Why is this not being talked about in every news channel? And I knew my answer. It's being suppressed, and there's a lot of denial and inability to, like, literally see the world as it is. I mean, the discernment that you and I have, I think, is unique, unfortunately. And part of the reason I wrote the book is, and I left out in the book a lot of the, you know, the who and the why, because most people can't accept that. But I just wanted to let them know this is true. It's happening. And if you have a better explanation, I'd love to hear. But no one wants to seem to talk about it, especially our global governments and health authorities. So I declare at the end of the book, it's a cover up and a crime at this point. And that's all I need to get across to people. And if we wake up people, I think we have a shot of turning the tide. It's the battle for the marginal mind. And we're in a race against time because, like you said, I know smart people who disowned me once I started talking about this.
Yes.
And they're not dumb, but they just don't know how the world really works. They don't have the ability to, like, put the pieces of the puzzle together. And that's why I had a good career on Wall Street. Most of my peers are nothing more than, you know, glorified news reporters waiting for confirmation from, you know, the Wall Street Journal or the New York Times. And you can't make money doing that. So that's and, you know, you know, people like you and Dr. Ryan Cole and Steve Bannon, you may not know it, but your stock analysts, you could have done well on Wall Street had you taken that, you know, path. I mean, because you have what we call critical thinking skills.
Yeah, well, yeah, I'm glad you mentioned that because, yeah, you're right. We're all in essence stock pickers, but where you get strongly financially rewarded with leverage if you're right, or destroyed if you're wrong. But on these issues that you and I are talking about here, you know, I got to say, you've been right, we've been right. Oh, on so many aspects of this, and we're right with a burden of realizing what this means, where an oblivious person can just, you know, hip hop, happy go lucky through this whole thing. Ah, nothing matters. It's fine, but it's not actually. So there's a spiritual burden almost of having a sense of knowing what's going on.
Well, let me comment on that. So you and I have a moral obligation to try to wake these people up, but the longer they stay asleep and don't realize the trends, the asymmetric information has to be used by us at some point. So that's why I'm starting my hedge fund. And you are doing what you're doing to create a whole new system. And there's going to be tremendous opportunities, Mike, even in the worst, in the Great Depression, people who kept their heads and saw the new trends emerging became fabulously wealthy for their families and friends. And I'm not in this game to get wealthy, but I want to survive. And one of the trends that you and I just talked about is globalization is done and local is the new way. Mm-hmm. The new economy is starting. And if you can get into it, get involved, ignore all the hate you're going to get for it, you're going to be well positioned to take advantage of the chaos and survive. And it's, you know, at some point, survival becomes a big part of this. So, you know, I look at this as an awful tragedy. That's why we put all our data on the Humanity Project for everyone to see. Eventually, we're going to get APIs so people can download everything. Mm. They can download some of it now. And our goal is to stop this. But in the absence of that, we have to take advantage of it and move forward and care for those of us who know what's going on in our families.
Yes.
It's kind of a small club. I hope the club gets bigger. But if it doesn't, then too bad.
Well, I agree with you. I think the club, at some point, either people join the club or they don't make it.
And they don't make it. No.
When you talk about the local, you know, the collapse of globalism and how this resorts to a local economy, you know, we can reasonably project what that means for consumerism. For example, appliances that would be purchased by people would no longer, they wouldn't have a disposable mindset where you buy something and throw it away. So it would mean domestically made, higher quality, long lasting appliances or shoes or, you know, gear or anything that could be repaired. And so you have a whole new local economy of repair people, for example, and repair businesses.
Absolutely. And you know, in the tribe I'm forming on Maui, I have carpenters and mechanics and, you know, you got to have people that know how to do stuff. I mean, I'm a numbers guy. I'm a Wall Street guy. My ability to fix my car is zero, but I know people who can. And we're all going to form this kind of this, like, in the absence of a currency, barter system. Yes. We're going to figure it out, and we're all going to get each other's backs. And that's, there will be a new renaissance based on local human connections. Because we're, you know, the powers that be are openly talking about transhumanism and plugging into the Borg system. And I'm not doing that. And I think that most people that plug into it won't make it. I think I think most of those people are going to end up dying. And those of us who stay outside the system and form our own new world are going to be much healthier, happier, and, living vibrantly in with less stuff. And, you know, be prepared for less stuff, and your lifestyle is going to change. And if you care about stuff, forget about it. Move on.
Stuff's going to be a lot more expensive, more difficult to acquire. But I love how you're talking about really a parallel transactional economy, because I completely agree with you. Central bank digital currencies appear to be getting rolled out, at least at the pilot stage, next year in the United States and the UK and other countries. It's already being pushed aggressively in Nigeria, for example. But do you think that there will be successful parallel off-grid or decentralized currency type of systems? And what might that look like? Or have you done much pondering of that topic?
Well, before I met Carlos and Yuri, were working on a crypto project, not to speculate and get fabulously wealthy. They're looking at they like the blockchain technology. They think Bitcoin, because of its open source, while good, is also bad because governments can look at what you're doing. Mm-hmm. We're looking at creating a transactional crypto that's got privacy to it. Now, that will mean black market and nefarious activities, but that's part of the cost of liberty. And we want to be able to, and so part of the reason we're doing the hedge fund is not just to make money, it's to take those profits and do new projects like new holistic medicine situations like the FLCC, contribute to like our favorite charities. The Humanity Project will become nonprofit, invest in political movements, and invest in just anything and everything that is going to create a new economy. And the crypto project will get funded at some point. That's on the back burner. We're basically using the current system as it stands to leverage into the new one, if that makes sense.
Well, yeah, it does. And look, I've looked into, at some level, the crypto technology and the zero knowledge tech. And I don't own any of this coin, so I'm not plugging it, folks. But Monero, in my assessment, has the best technology for zero knowledge because it's got encryption rings.
That's what Carlos is looking at as well. So
really?
you hit it. Monero is the one we're looking at.
Wow. Okay. Yeah. All right. Well, I did a lot of assessment. I talked to a lot of people, and that's the one that I arrived at. But of course, it's not very liquid because relatively few people are using it. It's more computational intensive because of the zero knowledge aspects of it. But man, it's got everything that you would want in a privacy cryptocurrency. Everything.
Correct. So that's a project we hope to fund down the road once we get up and running. And there's going to be transition, and we're going to be going from dollars to central bank digital currencies to an alternative system that will emerge. Whether it's me, you, or it will emerge. There's always a resistance, and whether we're the players on the field or someone else, there'll be something.
Yeah, 100%. Well, please keep us posted. We really appreciate you, Ed. I mean, what you're doing for the world is so critical, and you're doing it so with such proficiency that you're really a gift to this world. So thank you for everything that you're doing. And I want to mention your book, Cause Unknown, and your website, theylliedpeopledied.com. Is there anything else you want to mention here before we wrap this up?
No, I just also want to give a shout out to you. I mean, I've been following you for years, and Alex Jones and all the independent media. I don't call them alternative anymore. They're independent. And, you know, part of my worldview was formed by, you know, listening to guys like you who had pieces of the puzzle. Like, we're not always right, but we're directionally right. And we've gotten some things wrong, but we know what's going on. And I want to give a shout out to you and others who've like helped people kind of piece it together. I mean, my ability to do what I've done would not have happened had I not been informed by guys like you and Alex and others.
Wow. Well, thank you for that. I mean, we're all trying to do the same thing here, which is to let humanity see what's coming. And you're right. We're not always correct. Sometimes we look a little too far ahead, or we don't anticipate completely how efficiently governments can delay financial catastrophes or currency collapses. But like you said, we're directionally correct and we have the right motivation. We're working in good faith. We're trying to help our fellow human
exactly.
beings. So
exactly. It's all about team humanity. If you try to peg me as a Democrat or a Republican, not you, but if people tried to, they won't be able to, because I could care less about either party at this point.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. I'm not a party person either. I'm a humanity person, and whatever that looks like is what I'm on board with. So keep us posted, and thank you for all your time. And for everybody listening here, again, Cause Unknown is the book. It's at brighteonbooks.com as well as Amazon, Barnes & Noble, other places. And then also check out Ed Dowd's website, theylied.peopledied.com. And you can also repost this interview on other channels or other platforms. You have our permission.
Oh, one other thing, Mike. I got reinstated on Twitter today, so I'm back with a vengeance.
Okay.
Yeah. Wow. But look, the book is primarily designed. You'll like it if you're in the red meat crowd. You'll like it. It's a great book. But we kept out the who and the why to protect people's worldview. But this book can be handed to a family member that thinks you're crazy, and then say, hey, this is what a Wall Street guy says it looks like, and he's raising a hedge fund to take advantage of what he sees as reality. You can continue to think we're crazy, but good luck. That's kind of the message. We want to wake people up, and any way it jolts them, I'm using my Wall Street pedigree to wake people up.
Well, you're doing it very effectively. So yeah. Great point. Yeah, you can get this book, folks, and hand it to others and encourage them, or maybe mark a page or two, show them a chart, and pique their interest in it. So stand by, Ed. Don't hang up quite yet, but thank you again for your time. It's been an honor speaking with you. Love your work. I also really enjoy talking to high IQ people. So this is you're one of the best. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Mike. Take care.
All right, you too.
A global reset is coming. And that's why I've recorded a new 9-hour audiobook. It's called The Global Reset Survival Guide. You can download it for free by subscribing to the naturalnews.com email newsletter, which is also free. I'll describe how the monetary system fails. I also cover emergency medicine and first aid and what to buy to help you avoid infections. So download this guide. It's free. It's my gift to you simply because I want like-minded people to survive.